AM920.ca. AM920 CKNX. You're listening to The Talk Show with Brian Allen. To talk to Brian, dial 1-800-668-CKNX or 357-1280.
You know, when it comes to our children, has the world become more dangerous, or are paranoid parents turning kids into neurotic scaredy cats? Our next guest says we need to let kids be kids again. He even suggests we should let them drive a car, throw rocks, and yes, even play with fire. Giver Tully is the author of 50 Dangerous Things You Should Let Your Child Do. Giver, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Brian.
Good to have you with us.
It's great to be here.
What turned you onto this idea that we're overprotecting our kids?
Well, you know, I think it was really a kind of generalized observation that my friends' children were not having the kind of childhood that me and my friends actually had. You know, there was something kind of being lost in the translation from my generation to this generation.
Yeah, you know, I remember when I was a kid. I mean, we ran around the neighborhood in a rural area, shooting birds with BB guns. We played with firecrackers. We climbed trees. We used to gather up those green walnuts and stuff them into knapsacks and then have wars with them. And we did all these sorts of things. You don't see kids doing that these days.
That's true. You know, it's really unusual these days to find parents who are kicking their kids out the back door of the house in the morning and saying, don't come back till dinner time. You know, that's considered an unsafe behavior. But the reality shows that kids who have that experience are more creative, more what they call persistence or resilience when problem solving, because they're used to being on their own, figuring out the solution to ad hoc problems as their daily adventures unfold.
Do you ever play this? I remember when we were kids, too, we'd gather together in a park, a bunch of us, real early in the morning on a Saturday, and we'd have an all-round, no-holds-barred game of tag. And by that I mean that when you'd be off all day long, wandering about, hiding in different places. I remember you'd try to sneak home for lunch, but if a kid came by your house and saw you, you had to zip out the back door, run from the table and get out the back door, and the kid would just run right through the house trying to get you. It was great fun. But you don't see that anymore too much either, do we?
You know, one of the things, I started a school a few years ago called Tinkering School. And it gives the kids it's a sleepover camp where the kids build big things all day long. And one of the things that emerged in that was this game that the kids play at Tinkering School, and it keeps getting reinforced year after year, which is this nighttime, in the dark, freeze tag. And they play it. At first, when it was at my house, they used to take over the downstairs and play it in the dark. They would turn out all the lights and run around at top speed, smashing into walls and doors. It was the most frightening thing I'd ever witnessed, but in the end, we had zero injuries from it, and the kids developed this incredibly detailed internal map of the house where they could navigate this complex floor plan, eyes closed in the dark.
Tell us more about Tinker School, because this is a great thing you're doing. Tell us more about this.
Well, Tinkering School is really, sometimes I describe it as a laboratory where I can experiment on children. The idea is that what we're really trying to understand with Tinkering School is how kids become competent. And we mean that competence in that most generalized sense. You know how when you meet somebody and you see them interacting with people and doing things in their lives, and you just tag them and you go, that is a really competent person. Where does that kind of can-do attitude and problem-solving ability and that quick way that competent people have of learning something new, where does that come from? And Tinkering School is an experiment in trying to create those kinds of competent children, or create an experience that fosters the development of that kind of competence. And what we do is basically give them real materials, real tools, and real problems to solve. And they have to build solutions to these problems. And so in the course of a day or two, they'll build a complete sailboat out of raw materials, a couple of sheets of plywood and some canvas tarp. They'll build a roller coaster with 120 feet of track that kids and parents can ride on. They'll build a hang glider. We did this last year. We built a working aircraft out of PVC pipe, duct tape, string, and blue plastic tarp. So what they can accomplish when given the opportunity is nothing short of amazing, and it gives them a real chance to show that they can be responsible with these tools and that they can own a problem from beginning to end.
What a wonderful idea. What a great idea, Giever. Let's go to the lines. Okay. Marion, good morning to you.
Good morning, Brian. How are you?
We're doing wonderfully. Do you think that we're mollycoddling our kids too much these days,
definitely,
not letting them be children?
Yes, definitely. I have a grandson, and he gets in trouble for throwing a snowball at school. Well, back in the days when we went to school, and we did go together at Campbell's Corner, if we didn't play snowballs at noon hour in the wintertime, what would we have done?
Yeah.
No? They can't do anything. A brother cannot defend his younger sibling without getting a teacher involved. It's up to him to go get the teacher, regardless of what's happening to the younger brother. And I just don't agree with this at all. They are not learning how to look after themselves. They are not even communicating with other people. They're too busy with their DSs and their even their parents will go out an evening and they're texting across the table instead of talking. It's just a crazy society as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, it really is. I remember when at school in Campbell's Corner, of course, we used to build the big snow forts, right?
Sure, and that's how we get our exercise.
Yeah.
Fresh air and exercise is very important, and it still is, but the kids nowadays are not getting it.
And by the way, Marion, I want to tell you, I really thank you for the time that you did literally beat the snot out of me and another guy in the schoolyard for getting out of line. That was the best lesson you ever taught us, Marion.
I must have forgotten about there were a lot of things that went on that we've forgotten about.
Oh, we had a wonderful time, didn't we? We used to build the rinks outside in the winter and do all kinds of cool things.
And go sleigh riding at noon, and that wasn't even on school property, but heaven forbid they couldn't do that anymore.
Yeah, you'd have to have some kind of security tester
Well, I think Marion's right here that, you know, schools are being forced by lawyers really to eliminate all of the sources of kind of social play that we had when we were kids.
Right.
And when are they going to learn all those subtle interpersonal skills of diffusing conflict or of learning to work together? You know, even if working together means we're storming the fort, you know, those are great lessons to learn in that age.
What's made us, Giever, what's made parents so paranoid, though? I mean, what's changed so much?
Well, two things have really changed, and Marion kind of put her finger on or suggested one of them, which is that, you know, schools, because of the high cost of any legal conflict, are constantly under pressure to eliminate any possible sources of being sued, to the point where you can find schools in the United States and in other countries, I'm not sure about Canada, where they've been banning things like tag at recess, even somersaults and cartwheels are not allowed on the playground.
Well, the same thing's going on here, right, Marion? I mean, because they can't get insured, for one thing. They're worried about that.
That's true. And they will not tolerate anything. Like, children cannot be children anymore.
Yeah. And I think the other thing that's really feeding that is this notion that there's two other things. In the legal system, you have this idea that anyone can sue anyone. So if your child gets injured, parents keep making it worse by blaming the school when the child falls off the playground equipment and, you know, bruises or breaks their arm. The other thing that's really bad is that as soon as one of those things happens, we hear about it in the media.
Mm-hmm.
Even if any child in peril around the world, the national and the international press pick up instantly, and we developed this sense that kids are in peril everywhere, you know, that it's a dangerous world out there, when in point of fact, you know, if you look at the last couple thousand years of civilization, this is actually the safest time in history, these past 100 years or so, the safest time in history to be a child. So we should be having more freedom, more chance to go out and be kids, and in fact we're having less and less.
But it's interesting too, isn't it, that we're overprotective of our children, often from physical injury, for example, and yet we're not doing such a great job protecting them from things like, violence that's in video games or bullying and stalking on the internet. We don't seem to be as good at protecting them from that, and yet we seem to follow them to the playground so they won't skin their knee if they fall off the swing.
Yeah, you said follow them to the playground. What I think is most interesting is that most children are driven to the playground nowadays. And
that's kind of a non sequitur, isn't it? You know, you want your kid to get exercise, but you drive them to the playground. Yeah.
Yeah. The problem with that thinking is that in driving them to the playground, you actually expose them to orders of magnitude more risk by putting them in the car and driving them than you would by letting them walk themselves to the playground.
Incredible stuff.
Yeah.
Thank goodness we were kids when we were, Marion.
Yes, that's definitely
true. Yeah, great hearing from you. Say hi to Jim and the family for us.
Will do.
All the best. Thanks, Marion.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. Let's take a break. We'll be back with Geever Tully. Yeah, we'll talk about some of the things Geever says we should be letting our kids do, including play with fire. We'll be back.
The Talk Show with Brian Allen is brought to you in part by Waukerton Toyota at the corner of 4 and 9 in Waukerton.
It has never been so critical to farm smart. That's why you must attend the Western Fair Farm Show. I'm Kevin Stewart from AgVision TV. The show's new expanded layout covers every aspect of farming. Of special interest will be the Precision Ag demonstrations on Wednesday, the commodity panel session Thursday at 1, and guest speaker Dr. John Fast Friday morning at 10:30. All included with daily admission. The 3-day Western Fair Farm Show starts Wednesday, Western Fair Entertainment Center. Presented by Farm Credit Canada. Buy tickets online and save at westernfair.com.
Are you a farmer? Do you work in agribusiness? Find out how Growing Forward programs and services can help you build profitable farming operations, have access to markets around the world, stimulate innovation and investments in agribusinesses, safeguard the environment, and much more. For more information, visit agr.gc.ca/growingforward or call 1-877-842-5604. A message from Canada's federal, provincial, and territorial governments.
How much wood could a woodchuck chug if a woodchuck could chuck wood?
It only happens once a year. The Kitchener Waterloo Woodworking Show at Binghamton's in Kitchener. Tool demos, free seminars, deals on tools and equipment. Don't miss it. March 12th till 14th. Online at woodshows.com.
AM 920 CKNX, Midwestern Ontario's only choice for news.
I'm Scott Fettigrew, news director for AM 920 CKNX. It's our goal to have the stories important to you when you need them. Hearing about what's happening today, next week, is not good enough. We can't be everywhere all the time, so if you see news happening, call us at 1-800-265-3031 or pound 920 on your cell phone.
On call 24-7, Midwestern Ontario's only choice for news. AM 920 CKNX. AM 920 CKNX Precision Weather.
All right, just a gorgeous day out there, partly to mostly sunny and warming up, folks. A high of 6. A few clouds overnight, low of -3. Then tomorrow, another partly sunny day, 7 degrees. And by Wednesday, we're looking at the partly to mostly cloudy, but a high of 8 degrees. We're speaking with author Geever Tully. Interesting book, 50 Dangerous Things You Should Let Your Child Do. The theory being that we're overprotecting our children these days, and in doing so, they're not learning some valuable life lessons, and they're just not having fun like kids should do. Before we go any further, Geever, how do we get the book, by the way?
Well, if you just head on over to 50dangerousthings.com, we have the links to the various places where you can get it. Because we're self-published, only certain bookstores are carrying it right now, but we're working on getting it everywhere. But you can always get it from Amazon as well.
Okay, 50dangerousthings.com. some of the things you say we should be allowing our kids to do, own a pocket knife, you don't see that anymore, do you?
No, you really don't. And in fact, a lot of kids who live in cities, you know, if they're caught with a pocket knife at school, it's a zero tolerance violation, and they end up getting expelled from the school for a period of time. So it's difficult for urban kids, but certainly, you know, rural kids should all be carrying around pocket knives.
It used to be fun. You used to take it out, you know, just do a little whittling maybe. If you had nothing else to do, just pick up a stick and whittle.
Exactly.
It's kind of fun.
It's really the first universal tool that we're given responsibility for. It's, you know, it's not just a knife. It's also a screwdriver and a pry bar. And, you know, you can pretty much take apart anything with a pocket knife. And you can make things, too. You know, being able to shape a piece of wood so you can make a slingshot or fit two pieces of wood together, that's a really empowering thing for a kid.
And, you know, when mom or dad or a grandpa or whoever gave you a pocket knife, it was seen as a passage, as a rite of passage, is that, hey, you know, they see me as a little mature now, you know, and I can have this. It was really something.
It's true. That's how I remember it, is a kind of an almost solemn moment when my father first gave me my first pocket knife, which I think I lost in 2 days. But the interesting thing to look at is if you look around the world, you can see a huge disparity in the age at which people own their first knife. You know, in some Western countries like ours, kids don't actually own a knife until they graduate from college and get their first apartment. You know, the first time they're really alone with knives is often when they're trying to cook something in the kitchen for the first time. But then you look in northern Canada, you know, up at the Inuit there, and you can find villages where toddlers have razor sharp knives for cutting up the blubber because you can't chew it very well, you know.
And yet there's also a responsibility comes with that. Nowadays, of course, yes, we do hear of kids being stabbed in schools. It's terrible. But the fact is, these kids are going out and surreptitiously getting these knives to do someone harm. They're not taught any responsibility around this.
That's right. I mean, and that's really the point of 50 Dangerous Things, is that these are not unsupervised, irresponsible things for your children to do. These are opportunities for parents and kids to talk about the inherent risks and learn how to recognize them and be responsible when given the opportunity to own a pocket knife or drive a car. It's really, there's this idea that, you know, you're going to give a child a knife and they're going to suddenly roam the streets wreaking havoc. And what we find instead is that children recognize the responsibility if you're clear about it, and they do treat it with respect.
I remember you say, let them play with fire. I used to like, when we were kids, used to like to get a hold of a magnifying glass, you know, and
yeah,
you could make the, you know, you make the sun burn paper and that sort of thing.
That's actually, you've tied together two topics here. One of them is burn stuff with a magnifying glass. I think that that's a really important thing for kids to do because it illustrates a really powerful idea, which is that the energy of the sun, there's an immense amount of energy coming from the sun, and you only have to focus a tiny bit of it to make fire. The notion that plants in the kid's head is really important, valuable lesson about where life on Earth is, where the power for all of life on Earth comes from. The other one that you touch on is play with fire, and that's something I really believe in. I've been talking about this with parents and educators for years now, the importance of letting kids make and play with fire as a way to help them build early on fire skills that are going to enable them to deal with fire in a safe and responsible way.
And this is important because in your book, when you address these various topics,
yeah,
we should also point out that there's a lesson to be taught here, and you explain For example, I love the one you talk about super gluing your fingers together, because I do that every time I try to use crazy glue or whatever. And I finally learned about this thanks to a segment in your book, because this could be a real problem. But you point out how this material works and how you can get your fingers unstuck. There's a science lesson here, isn't there?
There is. And in fact, I mean, almost every experience we have as a kid has an opportunity for learning in it. Either it's a social skill or it's a scientific experiment. And super glue your fingers together really is a couple of science experiments that I think are really important. One is kind of understanding how glues work and how to unstick them safely. The other one is, if you leave them stuck together, it makes a temporary change in your brain as you learn how to deal with having this minor disability. You actually rewire part of your brain so that by the end of 2 hours with your fingers stuck together, you pick up a pen without even thinking about the fact that your fingers are stuck together. And then as soon as they come unglued, that previous mapping of the ability of your hand comes right back to the surface, and all of a sudden you're back to normal operating procedure. But for a little while, you were a different kind of person.
Interesting stuff. I love the part, too, and folks, listen to this. You recommend to people, let's say you have an appliance that goes on the Hummer, whether it be a toaster or it can be something as big as a washing machine, doesn't matter what it is. Don't simply toss this thing out right away. There's a wonderful opportunity here to get together with your child and learn some pretty valuable lessons.
Oh, yeah. Children grow up surrounded by these kind of magical boxes. You know, the microwave, the dishwasher, the refrigerator. These are all like machines that do something. And the opportunity to open one up, look inside, and explore how it works, and really realize that someone else, some person, figured out how all these pieces fit together to do this job is just an epiphany in the making for children. They really get into it, and they walk away with this idea that, hey, someone else built this. I could make something like this too. And what a great lesson that is for kids, without having to hit them over the head with, you know, people made everything that we have in the house. You know, you don't have to. A lesson doesn't have to be explicit. It can be implicit in an experience.
I know you go out and you give talks all the time. What do parents and teachers think of what you have to say? What sort of response, what feedback do you get?
Uh-huh. I get pretty much overwhelmingly positive feedback right now, which I think is just a great thing. A few years ago, it wasn't quite so. For every 50 or so positive emails or conversations I would have one or two really angry parents who were accusing me of putting children at peril. And I'm happy to say that has stopped happening almost altogether. And I think that culturally we're starting to see that, hey, we're really missing out on something important when we don't give children a certain amount of freedom.
You know, I made reference when Marion was on the line with us, and we talked about some of the things we used to do at a little country school that we attended, and, you know, the building the ice rinks in the winter in the side yard, and then getting out and playing hockey and learning various games. And we were blessed with a teacher who would do that. He'd bring in things and allow us to build things, and he brought in carving sets. And I suppose nowadays the educators would freak at the notion of us handling sharp tools and carving things and doing all this. But it was certainly a wonderful experience. And isn't it sad that our education system doesn't take note of this and perhaps incorporate even some of the things you're talking about?
Yeah,
in their daily lessons. I mean, it would make school not only more valuable, but so fascinating, wouldn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, one of the things I talk to educators about is this notion of engagement. How do you engage children and keep their attention and imagination? And these hands-on activities are the key to childhood engagement. talking to children about the physics of fire and showing them movies of fire is the most superficial understanding of fire. But actually, you know, getting a hibachi or something and making a fire with small sticks and letting the kids poke at it during recess or something like that, that's a great learning opportunity that is easy and cheap to create for children. And after you've played with fire, now you can have a much more meaningful discussion with the kids about it, right? These are just ways to engage the young mind and get them to learn and explore, kind of plant the seeds for that self-directed learning and that self-directed exploration that's so important for kids to have.
And when you look back to it, some of the things we used to be able to buy if we wanted to, and our parents would buy them for Christmas, we were talking about that in our morning lineup meeting. Wood-burning sets, remember those?
Yeah.
Chemistry sets.
Yeah. Oh, you know, the chemistry sets today almost have no chemicals in them. The most volatile compound in a chemistry set is now baking powder, baking soda. So it has become, it's just sad what's happened to the world of chemistry. And partly that's fear of children becoming bomb makers. You know, that's just a terrible outcome of the long-term effects of
terrorism. But it's this thing, when you know as a child or anyone, if you forbid, it's the forbidden stuff that children
exactly.
often want to do. I mean, if you tell a child, oh, you can't have these chemicals because you can make a bomb and blow up a building, you could be a terrorist. That's
yeah.
the first thing he's going to want to do. I mean, we didn't think that way. why make a big safety issue out of some of the simple things in childhood, and they start to think it is forbidden. I must do this. You know,
exactly,
just
or there must be
ride.
Some secret thing that they're not telling me about how fun this is or
right.
how great this activity is. That's exactly right. It's, everything that we... here's a great example. I often meet parents who think that tree climbing is too dangerous for their children. What we find when you look at those parents as a group is that their children are the ones most likely to be injured in a tree climbing accident because they're sneaking away to climb a tree, they're climbing up higher than they should, and they have no down climbing skill because they've never practiced, you know. And it seems funny that I would put in a book, you know, climb a tree as one of the dangerous activities, but it came out of these endless discussion with parents trying to convince them to let their children climb trees because of that very fact. If you don't let them do it, it seems like this mysterious great activity that other people do and you're not allowed to. And so when they go and do it, they do it in an unsafe manner.
Well, it's a fascinating book. By the way, one thing I haven't tried and you recommend is cooking something in the dishwasher. I've got to try that one.
Yeah, I recommend that. It's a great experiment.
I don't know whether it's my turn to make dinner tonight, but here we go.
Okay.
Giver Tully, author of 50 Dangerous Things You Should Let Your Child Do. Let kids be kids, folks. Giver, thanks so much. A great idea.
Thank you, Brian.
Thanks
it's been
for
a
joining
great pleasure.
Us. All the best. And you can check out the website, folks, if you'd like to find out how to get the book and more about it. 50dangerousthings.com. We'll be back. We have a news bulletin coming your way. We'll be right back.
The Talk Show with Brian Allen is brought to you in part by Waukerton Toyota at the corner of 4 and 9 in Waukerton.
Paddy Fest returns, an event that leaves all others green with envy, you know. There's euchre tournaments this Saturday and March 17th in the Listowel Kin Station. An Irish stew supper Saturday at St. Andrews in Molesworth. March 18th is Seniors Day with entertainment and refreshments at Parkview Gardens. Other attractions include CF Vegas Night this Friday and a pancake breakfast, followed by the Paddy Fest Parade Saturday, March 20th. Full details at paddyfest.ca. Irish eyes are smiling on Paddy Fest 2010 in Listowel.
If you live in Midwestern Ontario, you have to be tough to survive winter.
A little technical difficulty.
Winter survival tips for living in Midwestern Ontario. Downfilled coat, 8 pairs of long underwear, a big scoop shovel, listen to AM 920 CKNX on snowy mornings for the school and bus report.
But no matter how tough you are, winter weather will hit, and you need AM 920 CKNX for the most complete storm coverage.
I'm Russ Murley, Precision Weather Meteorologist. We all know because of the lake effect, the forecast for Midwestern Ontario can change in a hurry. So listen to AM 920 for the most up-to-date and detailed weather information.
Yeah.
When the barricades go up closing the highways, find out first from AM 920 CKNX. When the school buses won't run and schools are closed, Phil Main will have the information you need twice an hour before the news.
That's where the magic happens.
The School and Bus Report, brought to you by Bruce Telecom. Connecting your world on AM 920 CKNX. You're listening to The Talk Show with Brian Allen. To talk to Brian, dial 1-800-668-CKNX or 357-1280.
All right, everybody. We know there has been a shooting incident near Walton, between Walton and Seaforth this morning. Scotty Pettigrew joins us now from our newsroom. Scott, what can you tell us?
Brian, we're now getting reports from eyewitnesses that, yes, there has indeed been a shootout involving police and an unknown suspect or suspects. It happened in that area, kind of in the north of Seaforth in Walton, almost in the Winthrop area. They have a number of roads blocked in that area, so you'll want to avoid that area between Seaforth and Walton if at all possible. We do have comments from Faith Weber of Brussels, who witnessed at least part of the shooting, and we'll play you that right now.
The guy laying in the ditch, and then the police officer was on the other side of the road in the ditch, but he was standing up, and they were both shooting back and forth at each other. And when I was there, there was probably about 5-6 shots that already went off, and then we had to move back farther, and then there was more shots going off, and the guy is just still laying in the ditch shooting. And then the other cops come up, and after that, the shots stopped.
And as you can imagine, Brian, more questions than answers right now. OPP on the scene. There are cruisers everywhere in that area, and no one is saying anything at this point. We cannot confirm any injuries at this point, and we cannot confirm any arrests. But we have that information now that there were shots fired between police and a suspect, and are continuing to follow the story. Bob Montgomery from our CKNX newsroom is on the scene trying to find out information, and we will have more details with Lindsay Vanstone coming up at noon.
So we don't know the condition of the people who have been wounded or anything of this nature?
No. All we know that were ambulances called to the scene. We don't know, say, the extent of any injuries, and we continue to follow the story and track it down.
All right. Thanks, Scott. Scott Pettigrew from our newsroom, and we'll have more as soon as it becomes available. Thanks, Scott. All right, let's get back to the lines. Mary, good morning to you.
Yeah, you know, the kids are just so coddled these days. Heck, when we were kids, you were talking about the uses of jackknives?
Yeah.
Well, this rule at our school, I think there was a certain number of inches. Your life couldn't be longer than that, but we were allowed to have knives. I might have had mine confiscated because I carved on the desk.
Oh.
But I got back at the end of the day.
But you didn't try to carve off that bubble gum that I used to stick in the bottom of that.
No, I think I was carving my initials or something. I don't know, but that was frowned upon. But I used to use I always carried a jackknife, and I used it to as an emergency hoof cleaner.
You see, it's interesting, and I sort of alluded to this with our guest moments ago with Geever Tully. In that, let's use a jackknife as an example. We saw that as sort of a rite of passage. If you got a jackknife, you know, you were a little more growing up, right?
Yeah, and it were explained to you how it was to be used. My father, you know, demonstrated how to hold the thing to carve on wood or whatever, and, you know, about how to keep it sharp and all kinds of safety stuff. Same with pellet guns and all that stuff. I remember being down in my cousin's basement, and the elders knew what was going on. We had pellet guns down there, and we were shooting bottles.
But, you know, I look back, while we didn't have our parents looking over our shoulders everywhere we went, there was parental guidance. We were taught right and wrong, and there were consequences for our bad behavior, right?
Oh, yeah. And you know, to go running off, not just playing. Like I was lucky I had quite a large yard to play in, but my brother and I would take off. We had to tell our mother where we were going, or we'd get in real shit.
Absolutely.
And told her, you know, we're going to such and such a playground, and away we'd go. But if we didn't tell her, and, you know, oh boy, we'd be in
trouble,
much trouble,
big trouble
for her worrying.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, where had we gone? Boy, that would just get you so
And,
much.
You know, I And I hate to harp on this, but let's face it, we weren't watching these horrendous, violent video games.
No, we weren't.
The music we listened to happened to be about love and little puppy love things. It wasn't about violence.
Yeah, it wasn't kill your mother or shoot the teacher or any of that nonsense.
When there was a movie, the hero was the hero, not the villain.
And there wasn't blood and gore everywhere.
There wasn't blood and gore everywhere.
Roy Rogers, you know, shootouts, and there was never a
drop of blood.
You
know, when I grew up, I always wondered, why were the Roy Rogers and others like him, why were they such lousy shots? Because they never hit anybody.
yeah, but they could knock people off of horses.
Yeah, they really do that.
They were shot off of horses, but there was no blood and no bullet wound.
That's right. You know, but, you know, and so consequently, you had the kids taking the jackknives to school. You might have had a little bit of a punch out in the side yard or something over disagreement. But I don't recall any people being severely hurt.
No, I don't either.
No guns at school. No knives at school.
And we started, you know, we had magnifying glasses or whatever, Coke bottles, and started little fires. But it was always, now we've got to make sure this doesn't get out of hand. So you know, there would be water nearby or sand or something to smother it with. We'd do things on the safe. But it was fascinating to see how long does it take to get this dried maple leaf to start on fire.
Yeah, we threw snowballs. We made slingshots and used them. You know, and we did climb trees and did all the rest. And yes, we got banged up a little bit sometimes.
And my father, we had a good-sized tree lot. So he went out there with us and showed us which trees were safe to climb and how to tell if a tree was safe to climb or not. And one time I climbed a little too high and I made the mistake of looking down and I go, oh my God, it's so tight. And I started to cry and my brother went and got Dad, who came and talked me down. Now put your foot a little to the left, dear, and, and talked me down, and then scolded me for climbing higher than I could handle.
Well, see, nowadays you'd have to bring up the fire department and everything.
Oh, nowadays, right? Nowadays, if the neighbors knew, they'd be calling the children's aid.
Yeah, exactly.
Reckless endangerment.
Yes. Reckless endangerment, exactly.
And you know, we used to just, so many of us kids, and we'd wrestle and we'd ride our ponies all over the place, and you know, never gotten to. It was never to do nowadays.
You know, it's interesting. I watched someone recently. I brought their kids, and they went to the playground. And, of course, nowadays you have all these, you know, very safe, you know, all equipment safe. There's no sharp edges. It's not like the old steel slides that had the sharp edges and so on. No, all of these things. And yet they're the parents, you know, watching every move the kids are making.
Yeah. And every, if you've got, for every family, there's at least one parent there. We were lucky if there was one parent for, you know, 12 different families represented.
And, you know, I have news for the folks. You know, if they think that there weren't bad people out there and bad things didn't happen, yes, they did. Mm-hmm. There were pedophiles roaming around, yes, just like there are today, sadly.
Mm-hmm.
There were other issues around that. But you can't live... you can't survive in fear mode all the time. Everybody suffers from it.
Yeah, you know, the overprotective society. When I was a little girl, now I'm telling stories, we used to raft on the Pigpen Slough. Now, for all of those who don't know what a Pigpen Slough is, it's a pond in the pig yard. And yes, the pigs did use it. And well, let's just say that thing was really rank.
Yeah, that wasn't water you were on. You knew that, Mary.
So we were very careful not to fall in. That didn't keep some of our rafts from sinking. And then when my cousins have to rescue us on her raft, and we wound up so filthy dirty and so caked in mud. Well, by the way, riding pigs was lots of the fun, too.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And then you wind up in the worst possible place, you know, as far as the land and the worst mud. And then we'd get so dirty that my aunt would greet us at the door with a big sheet of plywood, and one day it would be the girl's turn, another would be the boy's turn to be the first ones in, and we'd have to strip inside the kitchen door, and she brought us clean clothes, and then we'd take our clothes, held out on the ends of our, you know, by our fingertips as far away from us as we could, hung them on the line until they were dry enough to beat the mud out of them, and then we could bring them in to be washed later.
But you know, there was no
nowadays
better...
Nowadays, that would not be allowed.
No way. There was no better feeling as a kid, too, you know, in the wintertime. You'd be gone all day tobogganing or shoveling off an area to play some hockey or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And you came home so cold.
So exhausted.
Kind of crying because you were so cold and so exhausted. But I'll tell you, that feeling of getting in the warm house and, like, your head hit the pillow and next thing you knew, it was the next
morning.
And
it didn't matter what supper was. You were ravenously hungry.
That's
ate it all up.
That's right. And, yeah, boy, I'll tell you, it's a great feeling.
Yeah. And, you know, I feel sorry for kids nowadays. They're
I really do.
A lot.
I do as well. It's too bad.
Including rafting on the pig pen, too.
That's right.
I look back and I think, nowadays, there'd be such a hue and cry about E. coli and all kinds of things.
Yeah,
but,
plus you'd have to have a $300 special unit to do that, you see.
And we, you know, we were the happy, healthy kids. We never got sick.
No, that's right.
Certainly not from the pig pen.
I always noticed, too, there weren't the allergies like there are today. Kids are allergic to everything.
Yeah.
You know? Now,
it's really sad.
We didn't hear that back then so much.
No, we didn't.
I know we sounded like a bunch of old fogies, but I think, as our guest pointed out earlier, it's just things have changed, and sometimes change isn't always for the better. You know what's that old saying? If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
I don't think it's the things that have changed. I think it's the attitudes.
Right.
And that's really sad because kids are denied the right, I consider it right, to play in their backyard and just have fun, be kids, get dirty.
And youth is so fleeting, isn't it?
Those
years go by too quickly.
Yeah.
Good to hear from you, Mary. Listen, I'll let you get out there. I don't know. Today it might be a little wet there to head out to the pig pond, but...
no, the pig pond is like 40 years ago and several thousand miles away.
A distant memory. Mary, thanks. Always great to talk to you.
Yeah, okay.
Have a great day.
You too.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.